Hey, superhero fans, I'm Echo Kellum. I play Curtis Holt on the CW's Arrow, and you are listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life.
Greetings and welcome, one and all. This is Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I'm your host, Joe Stuber, celebrating the 75th anniversary of the Emerald Archer right here on Comic Book Central. The character Green Arrow first appeared back in 1941 in DC Comics, and the character is still as popular as ever. The show Arrow is a huge hit on the CW. Season 5 is just around the corner. And for the next two episodes of Comic Book Central, I will be speaking with two amazing actors who were introduced in Season 4 of the show. This week, Echo Kellum, he plays good guy Curtis Holt on the show. Next week, you're going to hear from Jimmy Akingbola, who played Baron Ryder, the villain from the Island flashback. So a lot of amazing Arrow goodness headed your way right here on Comic Book Central. This is the place to be. Now, before we start the show, a couple of items. First, be sure to check out this week's IndieCast at theindiecast.com. That is where you will hear my interview with the Raiders guys, talking Indiana Jones on that podcast. I've mentioned the story in the past couple of episodes of Comic Book Central, but check out the Raiders guys online if you are not familiar with the story, but be sure to check out the IndieCast at theindiecast.com. You get the whole story there. And I also wanted to mention an item that you might have seen in the news last week. The original Lois Lane, the incredible Noelle Neal. She passed away at the age of 95. Talk about bringing comic book characters to life. Noelle was the first actress to portray Lois Lane in a live-action big screen production. They were the original Superman serials alongside Kirk Allen as Superman. Now, Noelle played Lois also on the television series opposite George Reeves as the Man of Steel. She started in season 2 of that show, The Adventures of Superman. She was also Lois Lane's mom in the 1978 feature film. If you remember the scene, you see her on the train as young Clark is running by the train at super speed.
Golly! I saw a boy up there running as fast as the train! Faster even!
Oh, Lois Lane, you have a writer's gift for invention. I'll say that for you.
But
Lois, please read your book.
No one ever believes me.
For that scene, she also reunited with Kirk Allen for that movie. Also, an episode of the Superboy television series with Jimmy Olsen from the 50s show, Jack Larson. We unfortunately lost Jack recently as well. And both Jack and Noelle appeared again in Superman Returns. It was Noelle's final feature film performance. She was Gertrude Vanderworth. Another classic scene. It's the one where Lex Luthor married her, stole her old fortune, set the story in motion. Memorable part of that film. Noelle Neal was such a part of Superman's history. I will say this on a personal level. My wife and I had the pleasure of meeting her at the Superman celebration in Metropolis, Illinois, a few years back. I'm telling you, she was the true embodiment of grace, class, wit. She was so funny. She told great stories. And she truly embraced the character of Lois Lane. She embraced the fans, all the fan experience. Year in, year out, she made it to Metropolis for the celebration. It was funny. She always had like a Superman shirt on or Superman hat on. So she really loved the character. They named her First Lady of Metropolis. They dedicated a statue to her in 2010. She was a big part of that community. And she was able to actually attend the ceremony for the dedication back in 2010. I think that was her last public appearance at the Superman celebration. The folks at CapedWonder.com, they put together a tribute video for Noelle a few years back. Here is a little clip of that video. It's Noelle speaking at the dedication ceremony for her statue in Metropolis, Illinois. Check it out.
It is all so nice, so sweet to be here. And especially see the, over there we have the statue, don't we? 9 feet tall. Well, whatever. None of us were ever 9 feet tall, not even George, but that's showbiz. But anyway, thank you all for coming here, and love you all so much for this, and it means so much to me, because as Lois Lane, occasionally I get called, you know, people just call me, oh, hi, Lois. And I say, oh, hi there, how are you? No, I answer. And they say, oh, I'm sorry. And I say, no, that's all right. And but I just miss the show and everything so much, and so glad that you think to have us here every year. So thank you, and see you around. Okay.
The full video is on YouTube. I highly recommend it. Check it out. I've shared it on the Comic Book Central Facebook page, so you can check it out there. Of course, we've got the original Superman serials. We've got the episodes of The Adventures of Superman. They're all on DVD, so you can watch Noel Neal's Lois Lane in action throughout the years. Great way to celebrate her life and talent. She will certainly be missed. All right, this week we are talking about Arrow right here on Comic Book Central. 75th anniversary of the character. If you were with me on episode 118 of Comic Book Central, you heard the maestro of the Arrowverse himself, composer Blake Neely. Previously, I chatted with David Ramsey. He plays John Diggle on the show. That was episode 66. So if you have not heard those conversations, after you listen to today's show, you're going to want to go check them out. Each and every episode is streaming, is downloadable at the website, comicbookcentral.net. iTunes, Stitcher, Blueberry, you can find them all there. Please take a moment to leave a review in iTunes and Stitcher, if you would. I always appreciate that. I post the episodes every Saturday. Links to the show on Facebook and Twitter can also be found on the website as well. Spoiler alerts aplenty on today's show, talking all about Season 4 of Arrow. It's repeating right now on the CW. It's coming soon to Netflix and Blu-ray. If you have seen it, then we're going to talk about things you already know. If you haven't seen Season 4 yet, today's show is going to be a nice little preview for you. So let's get a little bit of background on our guest today and the character he portrays. Then I'm going to be right back to chat with Echo Kellum. Years for Green Arrow. You could say the same thing for Mr. Terrific as well. The DC Comics character first appeared in Sensation Comics issue number 1. The cover date was January 1942, but it did hit newsstands a couple of months prior. Now, if that issue sounds familiar, well, it is kind of iconic. That is the first time Wonder Woman ever appeared on the cover of a comic book. So that is certainly a comic book that has some historic significance. Mr. Terrific's Golden Age secret identity was Terry Sloan, rich, genius, athlete, martial artist, and defender of fair play. In 1997, the mantle was passed to Michael Holt in Spectre, issue 54. And the modern-day Mr. Terrific is also a genius. In the book, he's referred to as the third smartest man in the world, martial artist, athlete, and tech whiz. Michael developed the T-spheres. These were floating robotic spheres with a crazy amount of applications. Communications, weaponry, and Mr. Terrific can even use them to fly. And in the tech-heavy world of the Arrowverse, it's easy to see why the character was brought in for Season 4. He's known on the show as Curtis Holt, and he's brought to life by actor Echo Kellum. Echo was born in Chicago, Illinois, and he moved to Los Angeles to pursue a career in comedy, where he performed with improv troupes The Groundlings, Io West, and the Upright Citizens Brigade. He also landed television roles on such shows as Ben and Kate and Sean Saves the World. Now, while his character on Arrow has a slightly different first name, he's still a genius, still athletic, still interested in fair play, and according to Oliver Queen, after Curtis invents the technology that can help Felicity Smoke walk again, he is still pretty terrific. Oh, my guest today is an actor-comedian who plays Curtis Holt on the CW hit superhero show Arrow. And we're going to be seeing a lot more of him when Season 5 takes off this fall. A big welcome to Echo Kellum. Echo, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
I got to ask you about the name, Echo. Very unique. What is the origin story of behind Echo?
My father was very big into Greek mythology and astrology and whatnot, and so one of his favorite characters in mythology was Echo the Water Nymph. So that's kind of where it came from.
Okay, very interesting. By the way, congratulations on being added as a regular for Season 5 of Arrow. That was nice to see.
Yeah, I'm so ecstatic and just so thankful that I could be a part of that show, an even more prominent role. And you know, Mark and Wendy and everyone, they are so great and treat everyone so well. I just feel very fortunate to be a part of it.
I guess it's one of those things where you kind of expect, I mean, you kind of know the character you're playing, so you kind of expect it, but it's as an actor, you got to be just like, oh man, I hope this takes off. I hope this works out.
Yeah, For sure, especially on such a fun show like that. Like, I really love working with all the actors, and Vancouver's such a beautiful city, and you know, it's really a dream come true, like growing up as like a comic book fan, a nerd, just to be able to portray this character and to like be officially a part of the series now. It's mind blowing.
Yeah, I've heard you refer to yourself in other interviews as a huge nerd. So in what ways does your nerddom manifest itself?
In every way, pretty much, whether it's the things I wear, whether it's, you know, my Nintendo belt buckle, or, you know, catching up, watching Attack on Titan like 7 times. I mean,
wow.
Ever since I was a kid, I've been hardcore into anime, comic books, video games, card games. I mean, people didn't see me at the Yu-Gi-Oh! Tournament, you know, years ago, traveling down south in Illinois. But, you know, I always feel like my close group of friends and I, you know, we all were born in the hood and, you know, came from these really poor backgrounds. But one thing that we all connected on was just our love for nerd culture and just, you know, really stepping away from the inner city life and kind of delving deep into the things that we love, like video games and stuff. And it's a part of what's actually helped connect me with all my childhood friends. You know, we all have like Xbox Live, and we all like talk every week and game every week. And, you know, it's like, if you don't see the comic book movie on Friday, then you are roasted on Saturday. Like, what you doing for so long? You know, just,
no such thing as spoiler alerts in your circle of friends, huh?
Oh no, you got to get in ASAP. If you, like, literally, you don't, you will get your butt handed to you, my friends.
Have you ever? Okay, what have you like ever? Oh, so you're working. Okay, you got this series now. Have you ever like missed something and then had something ruined for you by your friends?
You know, honestly, I legit lost touch with a friend because he ruined Age of Ultron. Like, we literally didn't talk for about 8 months. Like, for real, I was like, John doesn't exist. He doesn't exist to me, you know.
Oh, man.
I was working, I couldn't see it. They thought I did, but
that's,
you know,
amazing.
Right now our rule in place is if you don't see it by Sunday, all bets are off. You know what I'm saying? So we gave everyone like a 2-day grace period or whatnot. But it's like, if you don't see it by Sunday, stay out of the group chat. Don't get Xbox Live until you see it.
You are hardcore nerd. You're definitely hardcore nerd. Your nerd cred has jumped off the charts here. You mentioned comic books. What were some of your favorite comic books to read? What were some of your favorite comic book characters?
I play a hero, but I've always gravitated toward villains in comic books. I just have always loved them. So, like, Apocalypse has been one of my favorite characters of all time. And so all the Age of Apocalypse stuff I really love so much. And the Onslaught series was like one of my joints. Death of Superman, Dark Knight. I mean, I've really run the gamut, but I just connect with these villains for some reason.
A little more of the dark side.
A little more dark side. You know, like my email's Darth Echo. So like, I'm very much
the fanboy scrambling right now to see if they can figure out the rest of your email.
But you know, it's you know, I love everything about, you know, the culture and the fact that you can really connect with certain characters and whatnot. But you know, I pretty much read everything that I could, you know. But those are a couple of my favorites.
Okay, well, I'm assuming with your circle of friends that you would have seen X-Men. What did you think of it?
You know, I honestly liked it. I thought it was a good movie, not a great movie, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought Oscar Isaac did a pretty bang up job in Apocalypse. My only one thing I didn't like was the fact I had kind of a dream sequence out, as opposed to real life. You know, that character definitely has those powers where he can grow and stuff like that. So that was like one of my biggest pet peeves. I was like, man, give him all his powers, you know. But I thought it was a pretty movie.
Okay, so yeah, we'll chat about superheroes. We'll talk about Aaron in a moment. I want to jump back a little bit. Who or what inspired you to get into performing? Was it comedians? Because I know you kind of went the comedic route. So were there certain comedians or something that influenced you early on?
I would say the biggest influence early on was In Living Color for me. And Jim Carrey, watching him just really craft these amazing characters, really leave, whether it was Fire Marshal Bill or Vera, the like barbarian girl. It was just seeing how he immersed himself so deeply into those characters really had the strongest influence on me as a child that made me decide, I want to do that. I want to act. I want to be funny. I want to do characters and whatnot. And that really, really influenced me. And then obviously, you know, Will Smith and Fresh Prince of Bel-Air and all his movies made me be like, oh, I want to be a legit actor as well. Like, I really want to just dive into the craft and really go for it. So those are like two of my biggest influences. Also, like my brothers and sisters, when I was about 3 and 4, they did this program on the south side of Chicago called the South Shore Culture Center. And they got to perform plays and do music. And watching that as a 3-year-old, 4-year-old, I was like, I want to do that so bad. And so it's just something I've always known I want to do since I have my earliest memory.
So in moving from Chicago, I guess outside of Chicago, was to L.A., what was the plan? Was it a plan to get into improv groups? Was it to just hit the stage, do open mics? What was the plan kind of moving out there initially?
Yeah, my plan, you know, being from Chicago, Chicago is the mecca of improv and sketch comedy in a lot of ways. A lot of fantastic people came from there, Tina Fey, Amy Poehler, Dan Aykroyd, Bill Murray, Chris Farley. But unfortunately, in Chicago, I missed the boat on improv. I saw maybe one improv show. I knew it was something I wanted to try. And all the commercial auditions I did included a lot of heavy improv. And I guess I just naturally kind of had a knack for it. So when I moved out to L.A. in 09, I knew I didn't know anyone. But I knew that I needed to at least be in classes and keep, you know, honing my craft. So I started taking an improv class, and it blew me away. It changed my life. After my first class, I was like, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. It's like this form, this type of comedy. And it really changed everything for me. I stopped, I lost a lot of my nerve, right? Because I stopped going to movies. I stopped watching TV shows. I stopped reading comics. I just completely immersed myself into comedy and live comedy. And so going to the theater to watch shows with my movies and TV and having practice groups all throughout the week was like doing at least 40 hours a week of comedy only, because it just really captivated me and caught me, especially this improv sketching. And I wanted hard on that for so long. And honestly, like, to pull it back to my friends, like, they would all be like, dude, you lost all your cred. Like, you're not a nerd anymore. You're not... Like, no, I'm just working.
You're working.
Like,
how dare you try to get a career?
For so many years. No, but improv just took over my life, man. It's something I want to do for the rest of my life. And I'm out in New York right now of the L Post Marathon, which is the biggest improv marathon of the entire year, 72 straight hours of improv. And,
wow.
You know, I did like 7 or 8 shows, stayed up to like 6 a.m. every night. And just like, it's the best thing in the world, best one in the world. And for this year, it's like the fact that I get to do E3, I'm going to get to the Del Close Marathon, and I'm going to do Comic-Con. I'm just like, life is so good. And also, what is life? Because it's just, it's a nerd dream, you know? I'm just living it.
What's the biggest challenge with improv?
For me, the biggest challenge and kind of a blessing is that it's gone instantly, never to be seen again. So, you know, you have some of these amazing creative artistic endeavors that happen on that stage. And to see people do that, and then to see mind-blowing scenes and things, like, that had to be written. No way that just made up and it's gone forever. It's such a blessing and a curse, you know, because, and like, you know, get to see that amazing thing that just happened. But it's also the great gift about improv is that you have to constantly be creating great moments and great scenes, and you have to bring it every single show, because what you did last year didn't matter.
I guess the blessing of that, too, is that if something bombs, it's gone. You don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, that's good. That's true. Then you move on.
It's not going to live on forever and ever. Well, maybe it could, if somebody's got a phone on them.
I somebody will definitely have a phone recording your bomb show. The shows will be bomb. For sure.
That would be very difficult to imagine. All right, Arrow, season four, you're coming in. Curtis Holt. Mr. Terrific, we know from the comic books, that's kind of where we're headed with this. They haven't said anything specific yet, correct?
About the character?
Yeah, about the superhero aspect of the character. I know they're very guarded about things, but it's probably, I guess, one of the worst-kept secrets in the Arrowverse at this point.
Well, see, the producers keep talking about the surface. That's why they keep saying, like, I just saw Wendy actually just recently in an interview was talking about how my character would be listed terrific this season at some point.
Okay.
And, you know, they mentioned that last year, too, a couple times. I've taken interviews where they mentioned that.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, they've dropped enough. I mean, we'll talk about some of these episodes. They've dropped enough hints around. Go back to the audition for the role. How did you, and did your improv skills kind of help you with the audition, or how did they help you with the audition?
My improv skills have been very beneficial to everything I've done. But with this character, because he's so intelligent and uses a lot of jargon and has a lot of very specific things to say, I kind of just put the improv aspect on the back burner. And I do improvise a little in this series, and like things have made it in that I've improvised. I'm like, oh, cool. I just think you have to be careful with a character like this, you know, because improv is always played to the height of your intelligence. And it's very hard to play to the height of the intelligence of the third smartest person in the world. You know, I try to leave that to the brilliant writers and everything that they put in. But if there's any moment where I feel organic or feel like I could go on a small tangent, I definitely do. But I'm more precious to the writer's words with this specific role.
Okay. Well, you mentioned, that's a reference from the comic books where they mentioned the third smartest man in the world. Have the producers talked about bringing that element into it, or are they going to drop that line in somewhere, or is that just kind of the comic book thing?
Well, that's definitely for the comic book canon. The producers doubt about his intelligence, but they haven't specifically dropped that nugget. But, I mean, I think it's pretty evident in the sense of the thing that he's creating, the tech, you know, whether it's the biostimulant to help, you know, people with paralyzed walk again, or the power cell that could help, that literally will change the way society works in a lot of ways to have these high-powered batteries. I think it's safe to assume that he is extremely intelligent, if not one of the most intelligent people in the world. So I definitely think that there's a room and possibility for that canon to be put out there.
Okay.
And a character I wouldn't mind if they said that. But, you know,
I just didn't know if, like, Jesse Eisenberg and Ben Affleck are going to be showing up on Arrow and you guys are going to be, you know, duking it out or something.
Yeah, or at least getting a chess game in, right? You know, something. But, yeah, that'd be pretty sweet. They show
that. That would be very cool. Were you familiar with the show, with the Arrowverse, when you kind of came into this, or did you have to do, like, a lot of homework when you were coming in?
You know, I did have to do homework. I was familiar with the show. My friends are big fans of it. And this is one of those shows where basically when I was on the show, Ben and Kate was the same year Arrow premiere. And that was kind of, I was in the comedy, it's about comedy phase. So I kind of, missed the boat on it. I always have friends be like, dude, you got to see the show. It's so good and whatnot. And so I felt like maybe, you know, the pilot, a couple episodes. Then when I came in and auditioned and found out character and the role and everything, I did a ton of homework, binge watched the entire series, went back and saw the comics, especially Mr. Terrific stuff, because I was familiar with that comic book character, but I hadn't really read any of his series. And then I just, you know, talk about homework. Like, there's no better homework watching a cool show and reading a cool comic book. So it was the easiest thing I ever had to do in my life. It was so great because I really did fall in love with the show. And, like, even had moments where, like, I would cry. Like, even when Moira died, spoiler alert, I cried like a baby.
We're past Sunday, so you're okay.
Okay, good.
We're way past Sunday.
But, you know, I was so blessed that they would even want me on such a wonderful show. you know, that really got it, that really, really, you know, knew how to play with action and stunts and, you know, drama and just all these wonderful actors and people involved. You know, they're all amazing fan base and everything. I just felt like so blessed and honored to be able to step into the fray of the show.
Do you think there was a conscious effort? Because we've seen, look, you binge watched it, so you really get a sense of how the show developed. And it seemed to kind of get darker and darker and darker. And they always talked about Arrow was the dark version, you know, Flash was the lighter show and things like that. Do you think there was a conscious effort to lighten up the show a little bit by maybe bringing you in, especially with your comedic background? And you really have this dynamic with Emily Bett Rickards as Felicity with this sort of amped the comedy up on the show, you know, for lack of a better term. Do you think did they talk about that at all, or was it that just coincidence?
Yeah, I do think they brought me in or saw something in me that could help some of the levity of the show, but you know, it's still important to be a dark show. You know, that's really what the Arrow can do. I mean, look, first like season and a half, he was murdering people. Killing people.
That's true. Yeah, well, true, yeah.
Murder, kill, who knows what to say.
Yeah.
But, you know, it came from, you know, this very hardcore place. But, you know, even within the first season, you know, you see how Emily Bett Rickards was kind of the light there, the levity there in a lot of instances. So I think that it's just really playing to the truth of our world in any circumstance, that even when there's darkness, there's still going to be a little light there. And I think that Curtis does help provide some of that light on a conscious, non-conscious level as well.
You mentioned the dialogue, a lot of techno babble when the two of you get together, you and Emily Bett. What percentage would you say of the dialogue that you're given do you actually understand?
I don't think I understand a lot of it. I worked at the Geek Squad at Best Buy for like 3 years in Chicago.
They're making T-spheres over there now? Sweet.
Yeah. But, you know, so I dealt with a lot of that jargon and, you know, whatnot. And what's so funny is, you know, Wendy just came out in this article and said, you know, Felicity's software than Curtis's hardware. And that was totally a Geek Squad. Like, I was the person building the computers or replacing hard drives or power supplies or RAM or whatever it was. And, you know, I was always decent in software, but that was really, I was the hardware guy there. You know, like, I was getting a 7 a.m. morning running diagnostics on some computers and breaking down stuff and building stuff. So it's really cool to hear her say that. It's like, oh, that's really where I came from.
Like, okay. Well, you're like multi-level nerd now.
Yeah. Oh, multi-level. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about some of these episodes. We talk about Mr. Terrific. We haven't seen him specifically, but man, they're dropping a lot of hints as we go through here. Some of these episodes, Restoration. We talk about, you know, the introduction of the T-sphere. What, I mean, did you, in your homework, are you looking at these things and going, okay, when's the T-sphere coming in? When's Fair Play going to come in? You know, are you okay. So what questions were you having for producer, or were they just kind of bringing you up to speed as they were going along?
You know, they really are kind of like, hey, this is happening this week, let's go. And I've always been a kind of person, I learned this from Thomas Lennon personally. I worked with him on his TV show, and don't ask no questions. Just come in, do your job, and get it done. Because sometimes you ask too many questions, bad things happen. So I'm like, yo, you tell me what you want me to do. You give me the lines, and I'm going to do it. I'm just like this team player kind of guy. I just like want to be an actor who's just there to really help benefit the show as much as I can. But questions I ask inside of my head are, when am I going to fly? When am I going to get that tea on my face? Where's my costume? You know, but I don't, you know, but I'm just like, let's go with the flow. I'm going with the flow. I know they got a great sense of exactly where they want the character to go. They've been doing a great job this entire time. So I put a lot of trust and faith in them. And I definitely feel like they'll take care of me.
Let's talk about that fight scene between you and Colton Haynes as Roy Harper. Yeah. It was episode 12, Unchained. Did you, how physical of a guy are you? How much did you have to work with the stunt crew? How much did you have to, because that's a pretty nice throwdown, and you actually get a few shots in on this, like this martial arts trained character.
Yeah, it was very cool to like for Curtis to hold up his own, you know, in that fight. But yeah, they had to do some fight choreography, a couple of stunt training, things. It wasn't. I wish I could have been the one to go through the glass, but that was a stunt guy.
I would hope. Yeah, that was pretty worked out.
But it was such a cool thing to do, and that was like my first time getting to meet Colton in real life, and so just how awesome and nice he was, and we had so much fun just shooting that scene. But it was definitely, you know, the nerd and geek in me was so happy to see Curtis Holt getting some licks in and just not getting his butt kicked, and like actually seeing kind of the trajectory of where this character can go, where, you know, he's not starting off in this place of like, oh, I'm just a flimsy nothing, you know, it's like that. He has some prowess, you know, they talk about his Olympic background and whatnot, so it's a real fun place for this character to jump off of, and just really can't wait to see, you know, what he's like in the field and what type of training he'll go through and stuff like that. Just going to be so excited. But that scene was so much fun to shoot.
Did you know how to throw a punch?
Oh, yeah. Oh, you don't grow up in the hood without knowing how to throw a punch.
Okay, well, there's that mix, because I know you said you grew up there, but then there's also this, like, I read a lot of comics when I was a kid, so, like, most of us did not know how to throw a punch.
You know what's so interesting? I read this article recently, not recently, about 4 years ago. It's called Revenge of the Black Nerd. And it really broke down this subset of, you know, African-Americans who grew up in these, like, I was born in the projects on 22nd Estate in Chicago. But this subset of people who grew up in this nerd culture who were just like, forget this gang life, drug stuff, like, this is the stuff I care about. But the fact is that you still have to stand up for yourself and battle. Like, I've had easily 50 fights growing up just because people are going to pick on you. They're going to challenge you. They're going to try to take your lunch money or whatever. And all of my brothers and sisters was like, you're not going to be a punk. You're going to stand up for yourself even if you get your butt whooped, because that'll teach bullies that they just can't fight you. And I fought some bullies like 4 times in a row. And it's like, you know, like, but that was my thing. Like, I'm not going to stand down and let someone pick on me. Like, I would always stand up for myself. And that was a real important part of my close-knit group of friends who I'm still close with, is that we all had each other's back. You know, we knew we were the nerds. But also that those guys who want to fight knew they had to come to our house if they want to play video games. You know what I'm saying? They knew that they had to come to us if they want to know what the latest stuff that was going on in X-Men was.
Okay.
You know, so it kind of gave us a little bit of cred. But, you know, you still had to fight off bullies and people who thought that they could just run over people and pick on people, and you have to defend your friends. So, yeah, I definitely had to fight a lot as a kid, especially because of that nerdiness that people think, oh, you're a nerd, I'll just pick on you then. I'll take his stuff, I'll take your shoes or whatever. And my brothers and sisters are not having that. Like, my brother would literally come outside and be like, you about to fight this person, and you're not going to get punked about it. And just watch. And, like, sometimes I'll get my butt whooped, and my brother be standing there watching, like, okay, hey, you step off, I'm a good job. But then that bully would not pick on me anymore because he got punched once, even though he beat me up. But it's like, I'm not just going to let you run over me.
You look quite convincing in the throwdown during the fight.
Oh, yeah.
They must have taught you something, right? Season 4, you're jumping in. It seemed to, and this is, you know, most people looking back at the season, they seem to kind of get way out there with the storylines. There was like a lot of metahuman crossovers. There was the stuff on the island there, you know, Damien Dark, a lot of these things. Talk about the tone for season 5, because Stephen Amell's talked about this a lot, about kind of getting back to what the show was about originally, these basics. Where do you see the tone going in season 5? Because I think you've either got a script or a couple scripts already. You start shooting very soon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got a couple. I mean, I think Stephen Amell is absolutely right that the show is kind of getting back to its roots and just getting back to that place of where it was. I mean, you saw at the end of season 4, like, he actually killed Damien Dark. You know, he like stabbed dude in the chest, which, you know, that was against everything he's been doing the last couple seasons, like trying to be this, you know, person who spares people. Or, you know, you saw him spare Slade Wilson after he killed Moira, spoiler alert, you know, and all that stuff. You know, it really is getting back to those roots, and not just in killing aspect, but just in the aspect of the darkness and whatnot too. And these first couple episodes I've read have been just phenomenal, and I just really can't wait to people get to see it and see where we're going with it. And I wish I could tell everything that's happening, but it's just, we're going to a really cool place, and I'm just so excited for people to see the trajectory of all our characters, especially with Strip. I'm really excited for people to see that.
Well, it seems like we're kind of getting like this gangster aspect of it, as opposed to like a metahuman or something with powers. Who's it? Chad Coleman, right, coming in on season 5?
Yeah, Chad Coleman, Walking Dead. Mm-hmm.
So it seems like there's more of a down-to-earth approach maybe for season 5. Is that what you're – sensing a tone shift even in these first few scripts?
Yeah, definitely there's a tone shift in that aspect of there's not like a lot of magical powers. And I think just getting right back to the nitty-gritty of the Arrow universe, you know, really, you know, knuckling up and getting down with some awesome fight scenes, dope choreography, awesome stunts. You know, it's really getting back to that nitty-gritty. And I think it's going to be a phenomenal season.
Sooner rather than later, hopefully, for Mr. Terrific? What are you thinking?
I think closer to later than sooner, probably.
Okay.
I have nothing to back that up. But, you know, I feel like, you know, they like to take the time and really flush out characters and stuff like that. Honestly, don't know. It could happen episode 8 or it could happen episode 20. It just really depends on, you know, really where they want to go with the season. But I think it's highly likely that it will be this season, though, that he becomes a...
Do you know, or is it a complete surprise to you?
It is a complete surprise to me.
Fair enough. Fair enough. No, that's fair enough.
But that's my thing is, like, you know, I don't ask questions. I'm like, yo, let me know. What's up?
Always a good thing for actors. Don't ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
Crossover episodes. We get that all the time. Which show would you prefer to cross over to? The Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, or Supergirl? And you have to pick one.
It's so cool that Supergirl's included in that mix now, too. I love it.
Yeah.
You know, I would probably pick The Flash just because I have, like, I'm really cool with Carlos. And I just think it would be really dope for his character and my character to meet and just see this nerdy banter that goes on between them and Felicity too. I would love to see all of them just working side by side. You know what I'm saying? That would really excite me.
Okay. Well, you've got Felicity with Arrow. You mentioned Cisco with The Flash, Ray Palmer, genius on Legends. New CW series, Mr. Terrific, Curtis and Company.
Call it the smart guys.
The smart guys. what do you think? Do you think they could spin the character off into a series?
Oh man, who knows? You know, I mean, I'd definitely be willing to talk to them about it. If they had that foresight in their mind, I'd definitely be open to that. But you know, you just never know who they're gonna like go with the spinoffs for. You know, but that's definitely something I'm not averse to. I definitely am working something like that. So could you call them and talk to them about that? And
I'll get right on that. Yeah,
you can work something.
Yeah,
out.
I'll get right on. Give me a cameo. And we'll see what we can do. Most
Perfect.
Memorable moment on the set of Arrow.
You know, okay. For me, the most memorable moment, it was the last episode we shot. And as you know, I got hurt by Damien Darhk. Spoiler alert for anybody. And I'm lying on the gurney, and David Ramsey's in the machine with Lila, and they're talking, and I'm just chilling. And then next thing you know, I just go to sleep and start snoring so loud in the middle of the scene. And they're like, "What the hell?" And they're like, "Echo." And I'm like, "Huh?" I just feel so comfortable up there.
Comfortable, or did you work like 16 hours straight?
Well, it was we were working crazy hours. Okay. It was like 2 a.m. at night. But yeah, it was just so, it was such a, and we were all just like cracking up so loud, and they would not let me live it down. It was so funny.
All right, so the Arrow Cave, much more comfortable than we first suspected, so that's always nice to know.
Much more comfortable. Thanks for calling the Arrow Cave, too. I appreciate that. Curtis appreciates that as well.
Was there, in your lab, Curtis's lab, was there a yellow lantern on one of the shelves?
Ooh, I don't remember.
Okay, all right,
I'm
whatever.
Sure.
I'm sure, yeah, whatever, okay. There's some acting right there, ladies and gentlemen. There's some acting right there. Celebrating 75 years of Green Arrow this year, what do you think it is after 3/4 of a century that this character is just even more popular than ever?
Yeah, I think people connect to heroes who really have been through struggles in life, because we all have, right? And, you know, he's been through the gamut, you know, of pain and loss, and I think that's just really what connects us to him, is that he'll fight through it no matter what, and that he's just extremely skilled and has this never-say-die kind of attitude. And I think people can really look up to characters like that, that go through the ups and downs of life and still persevere and keep moving forward. And I think that's one of the coolest things about that character, is that he never gives up. He's always willing to go the extra mile. And the fact that, you know, he's not some, you know, powerful, you know, demigod who's just like, yeah, it's easy for me because I have all these powers. He's a guy who trained his butt off to get to where he was and to become skilled at what he was and, you know, would do anything he can to protect the people he loves in the city. And I think people just can really connect with that.
Latest project, you're doing some directing now? You directed a pilot for Universal?
Well, it's a pilot presentation, but it's really cool. This idea that a couple of my friends and I came up with called Assassins Anonymous. And I haven't directed it yet. It'll be sometime in July.
Okay.
But I'm really excited. It's like my first like directing gig like that. I mean, I've directed sketches and, you know, shorts and stuff like that. But directing is always something I really want to get into. And so to be able to write this project that they're really excited about and to actually get it directed, I'm just looking so forward to it. Really excited.
Have you talked to the Arrowverse producers about possibly directing an episode of Arrow or Flash or Legends or Supergirl? Is that possible?
Not yet, but that's definitely something I would love to do in the future, 100%. You know, I've been shadowing Gore a lot when I'm on. He's our DP when I'm on a set. So I'm just trying to learn more about a lot of the camera aspects. I love working with actors and helping them find things and, like, really discover fun things about characters and dialogue. And so I'm just trying to really bone up on the camera aspect of it all so that I could be comfortable in, you know, all the aspects of directing. Obviously, you know, it takes a good DP to help with great things, you know, and I'm just trying to get to that level where all my camera knowledge and stuff like that is really prevalent. And because I know I love working with actors already. And I have had a lot of success with helping actors, like, find it or get to where they need to get for characters. And that's just something I'm just really excited to explore more throughout my career.
That'd be fun for us to watch. Hopefully it'll happen. Yeah. Social media, you're out there. Instagram, Echo Kells?
Yeah, Echo Kells.
And Twitter, Echo K. You're having some fun with some crazy some crazy videos you're shooting on set, too. Can we expect more from that? More on-set videos?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. And I like to do, like, series on Snapchat, like, just little weird series of, you know, simple storylines and just, like, multiple snaps back-to-back that, like, all tying together to form a full-fledged story. So that's, like, a lot of stuff. I want to do more when we get back to set. Like, Emily and I did this series last year called Aggressive On-Set Dad, where I was basically her dad on set and being, like, super aggressive to everyone that she was working with. But it was so much fun. It's just fun to do little stuff like that. So that will definitely be a lot more than that. I kind of, like, for the summer, kind of took a little break on social media a lot just to kind of decompress and kind of get back to my happy place, my tea place in a way. But I'm really excited to get back into that because I really miss doing a lot of, like, funny, just dumb videos. But that's really turned out to me is, like, when people are like, oh, my God, you got to find Echo Snaps. I'm like, oh, God, pressure. Where no, I'm just like, oh, this is funny to me. I'm silly. And then people are like, yo, that was great. I'm like, oh, boy.
Yeah, now there's expectations on it. Yeah, exactly.
No, that sucks. I'm like, take those expectations. No.
get those improv skills going. Well, maybe Emily can take some Snapchats of you sleeping on set. That'll be fun to watch.
Oh, I hope so. More
Echo naps. Series Echo naps.
Hashtag Echo naps. I love it.
That's it. Hey, Echo, I'm telling you, once again, congratulations on season 5. I'm sure you're going to be suiting up soon, so we're going to look forward to that. If you haven't been in for a costume fitting already, really looking forward to Mr. Terrific. All the best, and thanks for joining me on Comic Book Central today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
You know, as Mr. Terrific, Echo is a part of the Genius Tech team on Arrow. Season 5, who knows? Maybe he'll get a new cell phone. Just kidding. Echo, I kid. I have to say, I'm not a huge fan of cell phones for interviews, but, you know, it is what it is. But I am a huge fan of Echo Kellum, and I thank him for spending some time with us today, breaking down Season 4 of Arrow and giving us a little preview of Season 5, which premieres October 5th on the CW. So thanks again, Echo. You can follow him on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Those links you're going to find in the show notes at my website, comicbookcentral.net. That's where you will also find links to Comic Book Central on Facebook, Twitter, and iTunes. Check out those past episodes. David Ramsey, Blake Neely, great conversations. Oh man, the cast of The Flash, over 130 episodes waiting for you new listeners out there to go back and check out. Share them like trading cards, man. They're fun to go back and collect. Share the Lair on Facebook and Twitter, hashtag Share the Lair, when those episodes post each and every Saturday. Subscribe to the show on iTunes. Leave a review for those that have left a review in iTunes and Stitcher. They rock. I really appreciate it. You can get in touch with me also via the Signal Me tab on the website or send me an email, joe@comicbookcentral.net. That is what Ernest Edwards did. Ernest writes, "Hello, Joe. You mentioned anniversaries at the close of your last podcast. Last week, the classic gothic soap opera Dark Shadows celebrated its 50th anniversary. Well, there have been a few Dark Shadows comic book series over the years, and you've had a couple of past guests who appeared in the primetime revival 25 years ago. Rebecca Staub, who played Daphne Collins, and Eddie Jones, who was Sam Evans. Could any other residents of Collinsport find their way into the lair? Have a wonderful summer." Well, you have a wonderful summer as well, Ernest. Thanks so much for writing in. If I remember correctly, we mentioned Dark Shadows during Rebecca's interview. I think we touched on that a little bit, but I have to be honest, the show is really not in my wheelhouse. I'm a little bit more familiar with the superheroes, not as familiar with that as with some of the other properties. That said, I did do some quick Googling, and my search told me that one Joseph Gordon-Levitt was on the show, and he did eventually play a certain Boy Wonder, kind of, in a Batman movie. And of course, Tim Burton, he directed the movie version of Dark Shadows. Tim Burton, known to frequent the world of the Dark Knight detective. So all this thinking kind of puts me in a Batman frame of mind. So, I don't know, maybe not Barnabas Collins, but Batman? You never know who's going to show up in the lair. So I tell you to stay tuned, but I know you're already staying tuned. So make sure you keep those suggestions coming. I appreciate the email. And thanks very much for those suggestions. We'll see what we can do. That goes for all of you. I want to hear what's on your mind. What characters do you think they should introduce into the Arrowverse? Supergirl's a part of the show now. On the CW, she's a part of that whole universe. So what did you think of Supergirl Season 1? Stay tuned to Comic Book Central. I will say this. You'll find out what I think of Supergirl, the television series. Did I just reveal something? Did I just give something away there? Oops, sorry. Write in. You tell me some things. What are your favorite comic book movie and TV shows? What guests would you like to hear on Comic Book Central? Send me an email. Click the Signal Me tab on the website, joe@comicbookcentral.net. You send it to the lair. I will read it on the air. All right, fellow nerds, time for me to fly, but I will not be gone long. Like Green Arrow's classic boomerang arrow, I shall return, because next week on Comic Book Central, he menaced Oliver Queen on the island as Baron Ryder in Season 4 of Arrow. Next week, actor Jimmy Akinbola will be right here to talk about his time in the Arrowverse. I know you will be here as well. I can't wait. Until then, keep your quivers full. Keep reading those comics. Thanks for joining me here in the lair. Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivations 3.0 imported license. All the content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of the respective holders.
Good evening.
And where have you been, Mr. Kent?
Me? Oh, I've been around.
Oh, around, eh? And I suppose you can explain why you and Superman have both been missing for approximately the same length of time?
My dear Miss Lane, don't you realize there's a logical explanation for everything?
All right, start getting logical.
Well, let's just say that Superman had certain things to do and I had certain things to do.
Such as?
Well, Superman had a hunch that if he exposed himself to the full fury of an electrical storm, it might neutralize the radiations he'd absorbed. Well, it worked.
Oh, it did, eh? And I suppose if Superman isn't radioactive anymore, you aren't either.
Me? Radioactive? I should say not. See? This is a Geiger counter. If I were radioactive, this gadget would be clicking away like mad.
And what are you doing with the Geiger counter?
Oh, well, Superman asked me to check this plane for any traces of contamination. Obviously, it's perfectly all right. See? No clicks.
You're just trying to confuse me. But Superman and you, I still wonder.
Wonder? Well, it's no wonder you wonder. You're a pretty wonderful girl.